Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and with me today is James Montemagno. Hey, James.
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
Great. James is a developer evangelist at Xamarin, and James is back by popular demand, although we had agreed to it ahead of time,
yeah.
But by popular demand, James is back. This is the third of a four-part series on doing cross-platform development with Xamarin. If you haven't seen episodes 1 and 2, pause right now, go watch them, then come back. If you did see episodes 1 and 2, awesome. We're going to continue today with our story, and we're going to see how to use Azure Mobile Services from apps that are built in Xamarin.
Absolutely. Not only just built in Xamarin, just built with C# for Windows Phone, Windows Store, anything they might be building as well. So it's really leveraging what we do with the My Expenses app and taking it to a whole nother level.
Cool.
So super exciting. I think it's fantastic.
So before we dive into demos, let's talk for a few minutes on how people can learn more about this besides watching this fine show. What can people do to learn more about how to use this stuff?
Well, absolutely. Well, so Xamarin, you know, we enable C# developers to create native iOS and Android applications, you know, right inside of Visual Studio, leverage all your code. Like we were showing off portable class libraries, for instance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, have 100% API coverage. Now, that's the important part, too, is we want to tell people, learn more. So, obviously, Xamarin.com is a great place to get started. Download the tools, get started in Visual Studio right away. If you want to learn more, also, we just started a few months ago, we kind of launched Xamarin University, which we talked a little bit about, I think we mentioned it briefly.
Yeah.
So, it's really fantastic. It's a full year-long subscription. You know, it's a full online-enabled courses with live instructors, one-on-one training. You get certification as well to become a Xamarin iOS, Android developer. We also have an SAP program, like a whole bunch of things going on as well. So, throughout the whole year, you kind of take classes at your leisure, whenever it fits into your schedule. You know, it's kind of important as training. I've gotten a lot of trainings through the years, lots of conferences, trying to fit them in your calendar, you know?
Right.
So Xamarin University would give you access to everything throughout the full year. So yeah, go to xamarin.com/university.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. And then talk to me about the conference.
Yeah, so we have Evolve coming up. So last year, I forgot to watch, you can watch all of our Evolve videos, but Hanselman did one of our keynotes. Mm-hmm. He was absolutely fantastic. We had over 600 attendees, you know, thousands of live streams. So you can actually watch all of the videos at xamarin.com/evolve/2013. All the sessions, they're all available to anybody. It's really great content. And then we are having Evolve again this year, obviously.
Excellent.
So we just have a save the date right now. We'll be launching a lot more information and things upcoming. So maybe, you know, who knows? But if you go to xamarin.com/evolve, that's going to be your main destination for information, signing up for when tickets are available. It's going to be in Atlanta in October. So really excited. There's again, you can get certification there as well. So we did last year. Just absolutely fantastic. I mean, people were blown away last year. It was one of our first conferences. So.
Cool. All right. So let's just review for people. In the first two episodes, the first episode was kind of an overview.
Yep.
What is the Xamarin tooling? How do you build apps for iOS, Android, Windows Store, and Windows Phone, all in C#? And then in the second episode, we focused on the use of portable class libraries, which is obviously the way to reuse code. And then today, we're going to look at Azure Mobile Services. Now, we've done Azure Mobile Services before, a couple times on this show, on Cloud Cover, pretty good coverage. But what we're going to address here is something that I hope people know, which is that Azure Mobile Services are available from any device.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a Windows thing. And I know the Azure team has talked about that a little bit, but we're going to take kind of a different spin on it and see how somebody using Xamarin to build apps can take advantage of Azure Mobile Services. And then you're going to add a couple interesting twists to the story to make it even cooler.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, yeah, obviously Azure Mobile Services just isn't just like this database or table that you can have in the cloud. It's a lot more to that, too.
Yeah.
It's you can do write scripts in the background to do push notifications. You can do authorization, like Twitter auth or Microsoft auth, so you can log in, so you get per client. Because we're really thinking about, you know, right now our app is this expense app, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's great if it's disconnected completely. So if I have it on my phone, that's great. What if I have multiple devices? What if everyone, you know, multiple people are using it and they're out and about, you know, and they get a new phone, they want to automatically get their data at any time, right? They might be at home, They might be on a Surface tablet, they might be on their Windows phone, they might be on their Android tablet, who knows, right? Exactly. We're in a very multi-device, multi-OS world now, right? So that's what is great about Azure, is the Azure Mobile Services, which is built on Azure, right? Mm-hmm. So it gives you all that in all cross-platform. So I don't know if this is the portal, and if you actually go to, let me see if we can go to the main portal. So the main portal, when you go and get started with Windows Azure and the Azure Mobile Services, let's see, I have internet. You can actually, when you go to Azure, WindowsAzure.com, you can actually select a Xamarin iOS or Xamarin Android project to get documentation to get up and running. Let me see, my internet's just a little bit slow real quick. So if I go to WindowsAzure.com. And it's great because the Azure Mobile Services, obviously, that are built on top of Azure, it's a great library. It's a RESTful service, right, in the cloud.
Right.
So typically, if you were building out your backend, you know, you make web calls and you kind of consume this web service and things like that. But what the Azure Mobile Service NuGet and components do for your applications kind of takes all that hard work and removes it for you. So it creates a nice async awaitifiable API for you to access and insert and update records.
Right.
Really, which is what's the key here. Like, cloud services shouldn't be difficult, right? You know, we want to create these great services, you know.
Do we have, we do.
I think we do. Okay, so when we go to, I should have just binged Azure Mobile Services. That probably would have been the key to, spell it right. I'm sure Bing will help me out there. Yeah, WindowsAzure.com/mobile is the key.
Got it.
So because when you go to, when you look here, right, this is the portal. It's, this is, I'm inside the Azure portal.
Yes.
And this little icon here is just one of many that's available there. So let me go to my account. And now you actually get a full, what is it, 200 megs of data as well. So you can see right here, so we have, are you a .NET developer, Node, iOS, Android, Windows developer, and you can get complete documentation for anything that you're doing.
They've done a really good job.
They're really fantastic job.
Focusing and on that story.
Yeah, so for any device, that you know, anything that you're working with. So we want to put this in to our My Expenses app, right? So let's take a look at, pull up Visual Studio here and see where we're at today. Right. So today we had a My Expenses app. You could track all your expenses, upcoming, get some
and
notifications.
This app is in GitHub. We'll put a link. I think we had a link in on the previous episode, but we'll also put a link for this one.
Absolutely, yeah.
So anybody can go get this.
So inside of one solution here, we have our Android, iOS, and Windows Phone projects.
Yep.
And the key and the heart of it is this portable class library, right? So inside of here, we've really architectured in a way to be very, in a way that you could expand and grow or change your backends at any time. So now we were tying up to local SQL Net database locally, right? So I thought about, well, how could we kind of bring this multi-device, right? And I could just make it an only cloud-based experience and pull the data every single time. But we have our database in place. So I thought, well, we could probably synchronize between the two as well, right? So that's pretty interesting to me, is making sure that I'm synchronizing all my data between all my clients, but also if I'm in an offline mode, I'm on an airplane, I can still get to all my expenses, right? So that's kind of a key, is remembering that your users aren't always connected, right?
Right.
So kind of remembering how to store
always
and synchronize.
Always on, always connecting.
Always on. Yeah. So I first want to look at what I did over in Azure. So I have a table here, and I've created an expense table. And open this in a new tab. So when I go to my Azure table.
So that's a database, a SQL database, is that what that is?
Yeah, it's basically a mobile service database,
okay.
SQL database. And you can create one for free on there.
Right.
So and then you can have multiple tables. So I have a podcast episode, different projects that I've been working on. Yep. They all share this one database with multiple tables.
Okay.
So here we go. So here's my full dashboard that's available to me, and this will load up. So the dashboard is really great because I can get an overview of all my databases. I can get statistics, see how many people are hitting my APIs as well. So there's mm-hmm. their data, so those are all my tables. But up at a glance here, I can see everything that's going on. My super fast internet. Yeah. There we go. So we can see how many calls, how many devices have connected, okay. how much data I have available to me as well. So this is a really nice, great heads-up display for Azure. So the biggest part of it is that we already have our expense data object, right?
Right.
So what did I have to do to make it cloud connected, right? So it's really only Azure relies on dynamic. You can have a static or any of your own columns and rows that you want to have. Mm-hmm. But actually, I love dynamic because this allows me to dynamically add new columns to my table at any time. Yep. It figures it all for me, all with JSON. No big deal, right? So to make this web-enabled, my actual class, all I did was add these three or four different properties. So I have an Azure ID, and that's linked to an ID up here. So that's what Azure is going to use it as a unique identifier. Mm-hmm. It's just a GUID, basically.
Yep.
And then we'll talk about the user ID later. I'm not going to get into it right this second, but we have a user ID. And then I thought, I have all I was deleting all my content and stuff. I want to make sure that actually have it, and maybe I could do something like recycle bin, because we're not always connected, right? So I want to make sure that I'm not just deleting the data so I can synchronize it. So I have an is dirty and an is visible, just so I can track state of my object.
So has it been changed? Has it been deleted?
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So I could actually do undos and things like that too. So that's it. That's all I had to add to my classes, right? And then what's great is inside of the configure here, we'll see that I have dynamic schema turned on. And that's the key here. So that if I add new tables or do anything, dynamic schema is on. So Azure will do all the heavy lifting of upgrading your database and your table for you. So cool. So that's it. So let's implement some stuff.
All right.
Right? So we had our interfaces in our portable class library, and I had a my expense service, which was handling all of my get expense, get expenses, saving expenses and deleting them. So I wanted to make sure that I really made this cloud service, this Azure service, dynamic in a way as well. So I just created a very simple interface to make sure that in the future, what's next for Azure Mobile Services, where my application shifts, I want to make sure that I create an easy interface that anyone can tie into later on. If I hand this project off, it's going to be easy for them to take over. So what I did here is I created basically three methods that are insert expense async, update expense async, and then get expenses, right? So now anyone could use this. Maybe my database is going to use it, maybe my service, maybe my view models. Anyone could use this interface and pull in from one thing that I've implemented.
Okay.
So what I want to do next is actually implement my service. So I've pulled in the Azure components and the Azure NuGet, the Azure Mobile Service NuGets into my projects. So you have to add those into your Windows Phone project and the components into your Android and iOS projects. So this gives you access to everything available on Azure Mobile Services, and it makes it super simple. So I've implemented this method, or the iCloud service here in my Azure service. And the core of it is this mobile service client, which allows you to get access to all of your tables and then modify the data, right? So to set that up, mobile service equals new mobile service client.
Where do you store the API key?
So the API key, I've stored it locally down. You could store it in some isolated storage or put it somewhere, or you have your own encryption on it and do something crazy. But I've stored it in the bottom of this file, basically, for right now.
Okay. That's the other thing you can do. Hide it at the bottom of the file where no one will ever see it.
Yeah, correct.
Got it.
So I've had the API key in there a few times, and I'm like, just no one steal the API key.
Right.
Someone on Twitter finally said, why don't you just put it in another file or put it at the bottom of the file? It's like, probably a good idea. So this data comes right from Azure, from the portal.
Yes.
So you'll see this is my URL that Azure gives me, and then it'll give me an API key. and we'll talk about the user a little bit later. But if I want to get access to a table, mm-hmm. I just say, get table.
Right.
Like, it's that simple.
Yes.
It's really kind of magical in that way. Now, I've already set
and
up
again,
my table.
Again, this is all in the portable class library. So this code written in C# is going to be called from each of the clients.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, it'll actually be called from a portable class library, and we'll show that off here in the service.
We're in the portable class library, aren't we?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see, because, yeah, you don't... So the whole goal here is really to let's add all of our functionality in to the portable class library.
Yes.
Our clients maybe calls one or two more methods to get some data.
Yep.
But hopefully, there's very minimal code in the actual client libraries, right? So all of our code here is going to sit in our portable class library, and I've implemented those three methods. It's pretty simple. They're not doing anything crazy, because Azure makes it super simple, right? So we have an expense table. I say insert async, pass it the expense. Update async, pass it the expense. And then here, if I want to get expenses, there's a toEnumerable async, and you can also call toList as well, however you want to get it. And that's it. That's my Azure code, as for right now. That's it. And if something changes in the Azure Mobile Services, it's really great because I just update these calls and I don't have to worry about the rest of my code, right?
Right.
That's why I kind of architectured it this way. You don't have to. I like interfaces and they're fun. But you know, you don't have to. You could have just made the class without the interface. But so again, we had the expense service, right? The expense service was doing all the heavy lifting. So I wanted to now take advantage of this new Azure service and mix and match and get some fun with it, right?
Okay.
So when I start up, when I save data, so let's just talk about saving data. Let's just start there for beginners, right? So here I have my save expense, which is going to do a few things. Before this was the code before. I would just simply store it in my database.
Mm-hmm.
So I database save table, pass in the expense, I'm good to go. So this is the new code that I added. I want to first try to sync it up with Azure and then save it. So this method gets called whether it's a new item or if it is a existing item. So it's a save new, add new, or update, basically, method. So here's what we do for Azure. We simply say, do I have an Azure ID? Right, if I have an Azure ID, Azure assigns it. So when I call insert async, it will go ahead and assign it. Azure will return back to me an updated item with a new Azure ID on it, right?
Okay.
And then I'm going to store that in the database later so I know if it's already been synchronized with Azure. So if it hasn't, I'm going to insert that expense, else I'm going to update it.
Okay.
And then here's where I'm setting those dirty flags, right? So if for some reason, so to begin with, I should be not dirty at all. It should be clean. I'm going to synchronize it up. But if for some reason something goes wrong or I'm not connected to the internet, I'll mark it as dirty so I know I can sync it up later.
Got it.
Right. Pretty straightforward code there. So let's go ahead and see what this looks like. I've changed no other code anywhere else, right?
So talk to me about the task.factory.startNew.
Sure. So the Azure expense call, so if I peek into here, right, that's into the interface. So let's go back to my Azure service. So we created these as tasks. So I love async, awaitifying everything. So the whole goal here is that I might be calling in on a UI thread. But when I call it to Azure, it's got to make a web request and goes off to the back end. So what Azure did here is when they say insert async or update async, it knows to go off and create a new background thread, and it'll return to you when it's ready, right? So that's why in this instance, we called await insert update. So we're going to come through, we mark it as dirty, we wait for Azure to finish up, and we come back. So this method here called save expense, it returns a task expense that people can await on. So that's why I want to make sure here that I've done my hard work of processing the Azure requests in the background, because Azure does that for me. But when I actually go and update my database, I also want to do that in the background as well. You don't have to, but that's what I'm doing here. So I say task factory, spin up a new thread, and I'm going to tell it to run this code in the background.
So are you basically making a synchronous call async? Is that what you're doing here?
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
All right. We're in a world where some code has been asyncified, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some code is not.
Okay.
So in this instance of the SQLite net implementation, I had chosen the non-async version of it at the time. I think there is one now.
There is There is an async version, but does it run in the portable class library as well as the synchronous version?
I believe it should. This is a new NuGet that I added. It's a SQLite net, so this is pretty good. It's an open source project on GitHub. Frank Krueger was the original that ported it over. Yeah. And it's been updated since then, so it actually will use the native storage. So obviously on like Windows Phone 8 and Windows Store apps, there's actually native SQLite support. So what it does is it'll actually use the native storing method, methods instead of the wrapper around the SQLite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think there is one, so that probably wouldn't be necessary if I was doing it that way.
But we've learned a little bit about async on here.
Async away, I think
it's fantastic. There was a, it was an email thread that I saw among some folks who were commenting that they had seen on Channel 9 some usages of async that weren't quite, you know, how should we put it?
Proper.
So I'm just, you know, trying to make sure that we use proper,
proper.
And educate as well.
Yeah, so what we see here, and I think the biggest point is sometimes you see a lot of methods that are async void. Yeah. I believe at my user group meetings that I go to, a lot of the .NET framework guys are there, and there's always this big debate over async void, right? Yeah. Because you're basically, you lose some context, right? The whole idea is that this method will return a task to you that you can await, and it's going to do some work, but you can wait until it's done. Or you don't have to. You can let it do its thing if you don't care, right? Yeah. But when you have an async void, there's no context. What are you awaiting, right? There's no task for you to actually hold up for, you know? So that's the big thing here, is that I want to make sure that what returns out of here will see that this is returning an item. And the reason that works is because my method is a task of expense.
Right. This
it's a task that's expecting to return an expense.
Excellent.
Yeah. Cool. So that's the rest of the code. If I look at where the save expense was called from, we can see that it was called from my view model here. So in my view model behind the scenes, again, I have an async task that it's going to execute the save expense command. So I'm using an MVVM approach. We talked about it. You don't have to use an MVVM approach, but it works nice with Windows Phone and Windows Store apps, obviously. So here, I just kind of say I'm busy. I'm on the background thread. I'm waiting to save that expense. So that's doing multiple things. Now it's going out to Azure. Now it's going out to the database, saving it.
Yep.
I tell my UI that I need to update. There's a few things I'm doing. And when I'm all done, I'm is busy. And you can say I probably should log some exceptions here, do something. That's not great code, but demo purposes, right? So
yeah, but at least you don't get warned that there's a variable EX that's not being used.
That's true.
Right? You just completely ignore it.
Completely.
Is that right? Does it warn you? Or
it
actually
should
it
warn
does.
Me.
You are still warned.
I bet it puts it down here somewhere. Probably somewhere in the warnings when I compile, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. And IntelliSense is pretty good. So that's it.
Okay.
That's really like
I see that message, my response is, I know. Yeah. Tell me something I don't know.
Yeah. I would have done something with it if I wanted to. Let me just gobble this up. Yeah. So again, so the expenses service is calling our expenses. The expense view model is going to be calling this expense service, so it has access to it to go ahead and save. So where's my save command? Oh, sorry, in the expense. So if we go back to where this guy was being called, I've been using CodeLens quite a bit. It's a pretty neat feature see where it's ultimate feature, but it's definitely a cool feature. So when we're on that page, so we're on that second page, so when I hit save, this is when this is going to happen.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and take a look at my Android application. So we can see here I have my Android version set at startup.
Yep.
I'm connected to my phone here. Let's start a debug session. Yeah, so what will happen here is it'll start up our debug session, compile it up to the application. And ideally here, we should see an application with no data. Because I took out all that. We were putting some fake data in previously, so but no data because we're pretending it's a brand new app that we have for the very first time.
Uh-oh.
No, we're good. Just a lot of warnings.
I thought I saw an error.
No description. We're good.
That's a kind of a philosophical question. If an error has nothing attached to it, is it really an error?
Is it really an error? I say no.
I say no. Oh. If you're not gonna crash.
Yeah. Am I in my debug session?
Yeah. Okay.
So here I am.
So no data.
So here's my app. No data, but we want to add a new one. So I'm over on my my trip here, and let's put a I'm just gonna Android test. So we'll just put some test data in here, right? Go ahead and hit 90. Say it was $90. We'll say this was lodging. You know, you could set your due date in different mm-hmm. notes. This is what we saw before. The difference here is that if I, when I hit save, it was just going off locally and saving into the database.
Right.
Now, I believe my internet is relatively slow, so it might take a second here.
So now it's going to save to the database and to Azure Mobile Services.
Correct, yeah. So let's see here. Pull back up this guy. All right. Okay, so I had some, a little bit of debug code in there from earlier. There we go. So we're back over here.
Okay.
Perfect. So data here, you know, we can add, we can actually put a debug point in here too. So here's my save expense, right? So if I go in here, add a new one, say Android 2, make this guy 9900. Save this guy up. So this one we kind of go into our data, right? So we have an item. Mm-hmm. You have full debugging capabilities inside of Visual Studio on Android, right? You can look at all the properties. We're going to see here that the Azure code doesn't exist. So here, it will go ahead and then sync it up to Azure. So now if we go ahead and look at our Azure table and refresh it.
Cool,
some data.
Yeah.
Data's good.
But now you have online and offline capabilities.
Absolutely.
And do you default to reading offline in the app, and when do you check the online?
So that's a good question. You know, I think it's up to how you want to implement your application. A lot of apps have refresh buttons to get data. Depends on your purpose for the app. I wouldn't imagine that I'm going to be launching my application on multiple devices and entering things at the same time, right? Because it's more of a one-user experience. But if you're in a team setting where multiple people are adding expenses, you might want to get notified, which actually Azure can do.
It might kind of depend on what the data is. If the data is expenses, which is corporate data, then you would probably have the online version be the official version, because presumably other people are looking at it. But if it's stuff that you're just tracking your expenses or your calorie intake or something, then you might default to having it local and then syncing so that you have the ability to go view it from somewhere else, right? That's kind of the way like the Fitbit does, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's is that actually a correct statement?
Well, the Fitbit stores its data local.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Oh no, so yeah, I think Fitbit here's what it does,
I think. They might actually sync to the web first. I guess it kind of depends on where you want to view the data.
I feel like you should always display, get your users the data as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Right? So in this instance, I always show the local data first.
Right.
On startup or when the app comes back in, I'll try to refresh the data if possible from Azure and synchronize it up if an Azure connection is available. Mm-hmm. But I always want the data to be there, right? So I always want to ensure that it's there.
Yeah.
And you might want to notify your users that this might be an offline mode, right? You could actually put that in your UI.
Right. And then you need to think about if you're going to read it locally first, but you are actually accessing the data from multiple devices, then you got to do a sync. Do you have to do a sync first? Do you have to know if a sync needs to be done? Do you actually make a call to the service to find out if syncing is required?
Yeah, so what you can do, there's a few things you can do, and Azure Mobile Services does give you this ability. I didn't implement it in this version quite yet of the app. But what you can do is you can actually tell my Android device when I store a new item, I can send a push notification down to like my Windows Phone or iOS or even other Android clients and say, you got some new data.
Right.
And then from that aspect, and I think that's in the default when it walks you through, it's like a to-do item list on the Azure, you can add in that push notification support back down. That's of course if you have internet access, right? So you could tell your clients, like, hey, we have some new data, you might want to synchronize some things.
True.
Up.
I was thinking of something more pedestrian, which is basically querying last updated. Last time data was changed. I make a simple call to the service. Locally in the database, I query that table and I say, you know, you have to be keeping track of when you press the save button.
Yeah.
When was the last time, you know, data was synced? And if it's the same or within a couple seconds of each other, then you could reasonably assume that you haven't saved data, but I don't know, that might fall down if you've got multiple users.
Yeah,
it's a tricky question.
I did my best to, I haven't done too many online, offline database Azure synchronizations, but inside of Azure.
If you guys watching have any better ideas, just post them in the comments, because this would be good to know.
I'm always open to pull requests on the repo. So, but one thing that it does do here is we can see inside of Azure that we have a created at date. Mm-hmm. And also an updated at. So you can query Azure, I'm pretty sure, for these dates.
But here's the scenario. I press the save button, and 10 seconds later, Azure is updated because I don't have blazingly fast access.
Sure.
Now, my last update locally and last update on Azure are 10 seconds apart. So can I just assume that those 10 seconds were due to lag, or?
Yeah, I mean,
could. That's not really all that accurate.
You could always, so if you save locally in your database first,
like
that was the first save, on your next refresh, you could pull down the data, and so you get an extra record, right? You could synchronize the data again then, and then synchronize the times. So it might be something to look at, too.
Right.
I'm not a database, you know, expert on that, but, you know, from where I'm at right now, it seems to work pretty good.
Okay.
So we can see there is some records here, and there's a version number, and gives you quite a bit of data. And we can see these are all the properties that I had. The billable is visible, is dirty.
So one, just to continue to beat this dead horse, what you could do is you could store locally the last updated time from Azure.
Yeah.
Right? So you save, you update, and then you bring down that last updated. Presumably you can query it, and then you store it locally. And then those two would stay in sync.
Yeah.
So that might be.
Well, you could store, let's say you did put a timestamp on your database entry. If you also store that same timestamp,
could do that too.
Those two timestamps.
You could do that as well. Yep.
That'd probably be the better way to do it, because that way it doesn't actually matter when the data was saved. You have that accurate timestamp.
Yep.
Yeah. Here's that ID that we were talking about, the GUIDs over here. So, cool.
Okay. So enough about databases.
let's
move on.
Gotta have lots of databases. But well,
it's
a valid question.
It's not new, but you know, in this devices services world that we're living in, you really do want to try and figure out what you're going to do about when people aren't connected.
Yeah.
You know, because I know we have ubiquitous connectivity, but there's all kinds of places where you're not connected.
No, absolutely, yeah. And you can dip down too, right?
This, yeah.
I mean, here, you know, you dip down from that nice LTE down to like, you know, a 1/3G and you're like, oh no.
Exactly.
I see every once in a while I'm on Verizon, you get a 1X or X1. I was like, well, what does that even mean, you know? Well, so let's go ahead and see what this looks like on Windows Phone, just to make sure. So I haven't changed any things here. We're gonna spin up the emulator. So hopefully here, so we see we actually haven't modified any of the client code at all, right?
Right.
So I just literally ran the Android code because all my code is shared between Android and Windows. Now, of course, I'm not doing any synchronization, right? So no data.
Yes.
No data here. But let's add some new records. So let's say this is, and it's page down is the function page down or whatever is the key to get up and down.
Yes.
It's reverse from Windows Phone 7. It's a fun fact. So I'll do Windows Phone, and let's put a total in here of, say, $10, right? We get a nice UI, different looks. So you can see the actual apps, same functionality, but native look and feel, right? And I think that's what's important. So let's go ahead and save this guy. Again, we're going to step through the code, look at our item. We're going to shove that up in Azure. There we go. Then hopefully here, when we refresh this guy, we'll get a new entry. Boom.
Yep.
Windows
Good.
Phone. Cool. Halfway there. Well,
right.
Third of the way there, right? So let's go ahead and talk about synchronization now.
Yes.
So you can see how I did synchronization, and I'm sure there's a grand debate over it. But it seems to work for me fairly well. So I also have my delete. So we also have a way to delete items. Now before I said I was deleting it from the database, right? In this instance, I'm not. I'm going to set the property to false.
Okay.
So is visible false. And I tell my user interfaces to only show visible items. So when I pull from the database to display them, only show me visible.
Okay. So the data in Azure is the real data, and the data in the database is either a copy or almost temporary, right?
Temporary, okay. Yeah. Because we always want to make sure that we're synchronized back down from Azure. Yeah. Then here all I do is I simply call that same save method that we walked through, right? So I'm reusing this entire save method to save it up to Azure, save it locally. Then here's what I did for sync expenses. So I said, let's first see if we're offline, right? If we were offline, right? Let's go ahead and take all of anything that's in the database that was maybe new or is marked as dirty, and let's store it up to Azure, right? So the very first thing I do is I say, give me all my expenses that are in my database. Of course, I could timestamp these and check last sync or whatever. Didn't do that yet, but that'd probably be a good idea now that we're talking about it. So I say, give me everything. Check if I have an Azure ID. If I don't, that means I didn't have connectivity last time, right?
Okay.
Shove it up in Azure, save it. Else, if it's dirty, so it was saved to Azure, I made some offline modifications, update it in the database, right? Then I say, now we've already synced everything locally up, but let's pull down any other changes that might have happened, maybe on a different user, different client. Let's go ahead and sync that back down.
If you had enough data, you would change that from a get all of them to only get the ones that I don't have down here, right?
Exactly. And what's nice is that I wouldn't even have to modify the code here. I'd actually just go back to this call where I call get expenses, maybe add a new method
you
that
just
says
have a query.
Have a query on it.
Right, bring you down the dirty data, or the unsynced data, whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely, and you can add link queries to all of this. It's really, really phenomenal. So if you want to get something specific, you can get, you know, based on different properties, say only give me visible or only give me last change. So it's really slick. So back in our expense service. So this is what I do. I first go up to Azure, get all my expenses, and I loop through them.
Mm-hmm.
I check to see if it's in the database or not. If it's not in the database, then I got to store all that data.
Yep.
So I create a new one, and I pass in, and I kind of make a clone of it. Else, I created a method called sync properties. So all it does is copy it over. It's like a shallow copy, basically.
Yep.
But copy over the Azure ID, the billable state, so pretty simple there. And then I save it to the database. That's my sync code.
Cool.
Yeah. So then in my view models, so that's just my service that's running in the background.
Just for my own curiosity, where is that sync properties located?
So this is inside of my expense item.
Okay, so that's in the model.
It's in the model.
Got it.
There it is.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is. Yep. So here's all my things in here, and that's ignored basically. It's just a method.
Yep.
And the same thing here. So I actually created a brand new constructor to pass in an expense that just syncs properties.
Oh, okay.
Reuse it, right?
Cool. Yep.
Just to make sure. Now there is you can make it iClonable and do MemberWise and things like that, I'm sure. It's another way to do it. But it's also nice because maybe you don't want to actually copy over every single property that's stored. Yeah, who knows what you're going to be doing. So then of course I want to call this stuff from the UI thread, right? From the UI on each client. So I created another I command called sync expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal was to, when the app loads up, I want to call this and synchronize the data between it and then load and display some data, right? So it's fairly simple. I call sync expenses, which is going to call that method. And then I call update expenses, which is local here, which just pulls and updates our observable collection.
Okay.
So I've synced the data, but I also need to feed it to the UI at some point and actually do it, right?
Okay. So go back to where you just were the previous, there it is. Nope, the double question mark.
Where are we at?
Scroll up, there it is.
Oh, okay.
While we're on the
age old question.
Yeah, so I mean, today we are not letting any line of code pass by without making sure everybody understands what's in it.
Love it, yeah.
What's a double question mark?
Double question mark, it's one of my favorite things that I use. It basically says, I have a relay command, which is a way to tie up a command or a function to the user interface, or mm-hmm. just call it. So what this says is I have a local property sync expenses command. This says if expenses command is not null, return it.
Okay.
Else, do this and return it, right?
Okay.
So here I say, have I created an expenses command yet? No. Okay, well, create a new one and return it, right?
Okay.
It knows because it's returning whatever's after this. So it's like a ternary, but it removes that null check, right? So I would normally say sync expense service equals equals null, question mark, create a new one, else return it, right?
Okay.
Let's remove a few lines of that code, right?
Cool.
So, and that's what I do here is I create a nice, create the command, the relay command, and pass it this method.
Yes.
So, good. A lot of people ask me about the double question marks. I use them every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge ternary fan either. One's fine, but once you get nesting and all crazy, right? Don't do that. No, dude, it becomes unmaintainable. Okay. So, let's go and take a look, and let's run both of these guys, but let's go ahead and make sure that this command is implemented. So when I load up my application, I added these lines of code in both the Windows and the Android versions of our app.
Okay.
So here it is. So this is on create. So this is basically the state of our activity, our application. We load this activity, we load out our user interface, and we have our reference to our view model. And then I simply say, go ahead and sync up those expenses, and then I'm going to update the list and adapter.
Got it.
And Android adapters are a representation of what's in the list to display, basically. And you have to run that on the UI thread. And just sometimes it's good to double check it just to be sure.
Right.
It really is a little picky. It's sometimes the list adapter in Android. And that's it. So two lines of code, three lines of code am over there. And then the same thing's going to be true over in my views expenses page. I have a loaded command, so here I go, plus equals loaded.
Yep.
Same thing, if it is not synced, simply do it. Now, the difference here is that we are binding to that observable collection in our Windows Phone app, so I don't have to update anything, right?
Right.
It knows how to update it automatically,
yes.
Which is really nice. So, that's it. Well, the question is, well, how come didn't it work, right? Here's an evil line of code. That's why it didn't work. So that's my demo state, right?
Okay.
So you're like, James, all that code was in there, right? Why didn't it work? Well, I was returning true here because I wanted to step through the demo, right? So let's remove that. So instead of returning true, we're actually going to go and
do some work.
Actually do some work, right? We can actually go ahead and put some breakpoints. So let's run it on Windows Phone.
And there they are.
Oh, that's right. We didn't have anything offline, so I actually should have put some breakpoints down here. So I should have put breakpoints down here, and we can do it on the Android version to see what happens. But so what just happened, right? We have new data, right? So that was all the data that was stored on Android.
Yes.
Pulled in over here now on my
and
Windows
now
device.
Now this phone is in sync.
Now the phone's
database
in sync.
Has the same information as in Azure.
Absolutely.
And then you can do the same thing on the Android app.
Yeah, and let's check that out. And now you'll notice, so if I go back over to, not Kids Corner, go back to our expenses app. We'll actually notice that I put a refresh command down here.
Okay.
We can actually implement that same functionality. So I could do the push notifications, things like that, but we're going to go ahead and do a little bit of UI work over here so we kind of show how to implement this on Android. So over here in my resource folders, these are all my drawables, my assets, and I added a new folder called menu, and I have two different menus. So the actual menus are representations of Android XML or XML here. So this is the native functionality.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to add a refresh command so we could kind of just click and see them
okay.
refreshing, right? So there's a few ways to do this. There's an open source site called Android Asset Studios.
Oh, nice.
Just kind of like there's a great GitHub repo for Windows Phone icons. It's like by Templar or something. I forget. Maybe I'll add a link to it or a tweet about it. But this is great because it allows you to come in and create action bar items. That's where we saw that plus on there. But these are all the standard ones that are here inside of Android. So I could add the sync one. And it actually gives me the different resolutions for each version. Because Android, you're dealing with a lot of different resolutions, and everything's based on this DPI, or pixel density. So let's go ahead and do some of this here. So I downloaded it ahead of time, just in case for connectivity issues. But I have, this is what it dumps you in a zip file. I'm going to have a little refresh button. I'm going to simply drag and drop these in here. Go back out and do it for the other folders. You can see I have a few other icons in there, the save button, the new button that's in there. Let's go ahead and put this guy down in here. Perfect. So now our icons are in place, right? So each item in the menu is represented by this little chunk of XML. So here it is. I give an ID. I say icon. I want you to use drawable IC action refresh. And I give it a string, so I have a menu refresh that says refresh. So even though I've already implemented in the other area, I'm going to implement it here inside of Android. So when Android wants to display a menu, you have to tell it what to display, just like we're telling the adapter what to display, right? So I tell it to use the menu expenses from my menu folder. And then here I can do a switch case. And it's based on the ID, call a different functionality.
Okay.
Right? So I say if I was a new expense, I'm going to navigate to the expense area to add it. Else, I'm going to call the sync method, which again is just going to call execute sync expense.
Right.
Just like if we looked at the code behind inside a Windows phone, I've done a, where is it at? Delete click, new expense, refresh button.
Right.
So I say sync expenses.
Okay.
And we're good to go. So pretty simple. Let's see what this guy looks like on Android over here. So but pretty nice just to add a, an item to the menu. Really not that much hard work. And there's some great resources, just like the Windows Phone open source for icons. I think it's great because now I'm not using the same icon from Windows Phone that I am on Android.
No, you want native, you want the native look and feel.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, Xamarin Android apps are native
applications. Either that or make the Android app look like a Windows app, phone app, so people just buy Windows phones.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we're loading up our app. Now, I did put breakpoints in the sync area, so let's see if I hit those. All right, cool.
Yep.
So I'm going to synchronize up some properties. We'll remove those so it does it. But we can see we're fully going through, and I got my data.
Right.
Awesome, right? I can pull up my Windows phone right next to it, and let's say I add another. Let's say I modify this Android test, right? I go in, say this guy is actually $200, save it. More breakpoints, of course. Gotta have breakpoints. Synchronize it up. If I go over here, boom.
There you go.
$200, right?
Yeah.
If I delete one from here, let's say I delete Android 2. Come over here and hit the refresh button. Gone.
Cool.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Right?
Excellent.
All right. So we'll work to bring this to, iOS, right? So.
I predict that there's going to be a lot of stuff that you can reuse.
That's
my prediction.
It's a good assumption. I'm not going to lie. So let's take a look here. Let me pull up, Let's pull up my expenses app. Where'd it go? There we go. Got a little bit too excited. All right. Let me just make sure that my Visual Studio guy. So I'm connected over to my build host, so we can set our iOS project as startup.
All right, so to remind everybody, to build an iOS app, you have to be connected to a Mac.
Correct. Yeah, so we're connected to our Mac over here, and we can see my connection here.
If you want to do that, you just need a Mac. What's the least amount of money you can spend to get a Mac that will enable you to do that?
To be honest, I tell people, you know, if you want to be mobile, obviously you could get an older MacBook Air or something like that. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing your a lot of your development at home, or you can have access to VPNing in or remoting, just buy a Mac Mini. They're okay. A few $100. I mean, you can get an older version. I think the ones that you buy online are like $400 or $500. Okay. So the actual cost of entry is not that much. Of course, you're going to need an iOS device. Of course, you get the simulators as well, right, that you can debug on. So that's also a nice option. So yeah, your actual cost of entry is not actually that, okay, that big. I mean, you could go buy a crazy MacBook Pro with spec'd out. Like, I have like 512 SSD, 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, if you're going to use it as more than just a build machine, you could certainly do that. But
exactly,
let's say all I want is the cheapest Mac I can get so that I can build iOS apps.
Mac Mini is a great option, okay, for that case.
It's about $500 or something.
Yeah, about that. Okay. And, and you don't even need the latest and greatest technology. As long as you can run the newer version, newer OSs. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of a Windows machine, you can buy Windows machines from years ago, yes, that are running 8.1 today, right?
Right?
It doesn't have to be a powerhouse. I developed originally all my iOS apps on like a first-gen MacBook Air with 4 mm-hmm. gigs of RAM and whatever the 1.6 gigahertz processor was. You know what I mean? So it doesn't have to be a powerhouse, you know?
Right.
Now, if you want to start getting crazy with it, VMs and all this stuff, you might want to think about upgrading. So, but here we can see I'm connected. I have my iPhone plugged in.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, I can go ahead and also pull up my remote mirroring app. This guy is working. We will try. There it is. So this, of course, I have an actual iPhone here. I don't know if they can see. I don't know what we're showing, but I'm reflecting this with AirPlay. There it is.
There it is.
This guy right here.
And here are the expenses, and drum roll.
Boom.
Awesome.
All three.
Excellent.
Of it. Now, the only thing that I did, of course, was I just added that sync code,
yep,
to the iOS project from the very beginning, and that was it.
This is so totally the way to go.
It's so awesome, right?
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. If you're starting from the point where you're a Visual Studio developer, you know C Sharp, I don't know why you would ever not go this route. Right? I mean, you know, now if you're an iOS developer that already knows Objective-C and Xcode, I could see why you might be reluctant to now have to learn Visual Studio and learn C Sharp. I think you should, of course, but I could see why you could say, well, no, I don't want to go that route. But if you're already in the Visual Studio C Sharp world and you are going to build mobile apps, this is just the way to go.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, of course, I always mention it every single time, but it's no limit, so you get 100% API access,
yep,
to every device, right? So from Android to iOS, of course Windows, just you're running the actual Microsoft SDK there. There's nothing special that's,
right,
being done. With Xamarin, we're adding the iOS and,
yep,
and Android to leverage,
I mean,
your skills.
You got a little, yeah, bit of upfront cost. You got to get the Mac. You know, you need to, you know, there's a cost to joining the business program and getting the Visual, mm-hmm, Studio plug-in. But if you compare that cost to what it's going to cost you, let me flip that. How much money would you pay not to have, yeah, to learn Objective-C,
yeah,
right?
Or, you know, do all your Android development, right?
Or not to have,
right,
to learn Java.
Again, and maintain three code bases.
Yeah, exactly.
So here I added a feature of Azure in all of them,
mm-hmm,
and it did it in just a few minutes,
right,
you know what I mean? I set it all up in my portable class library. I don't know how much time we have left. I could also, at this point, add OAuth as well to the application. So you could use, and you can use like Twitter or Google or Microsoft,
okay,
OAuth. Right now, we're all connected, right?
Yep.
Through the same exact one, and the sample code will have it in there where you can add your own OAuth. But if I log in on one device, I want to make sure that if you log in on a device, you don't have my data,
okay,
right? And Azure Mobile Services also provide that.
Let's poll the audience. Yeah. If you don't want to see this, let us know. Okay.
Okay, cool.
Let's go.
Cool. All right. So let's take a look here what I can do. Now, back into my Azure Mobile Service portal, there's a tab called Identity.
Yes, and this is, you want to do this if you've got multiple users. You need some way of keeping track of who is who. Now, you could, of course, create your own database of IDs and passwords, and, you know, maybe use some, you know, you could use presumably the ASP.NET identity provider,
probably,
or whatever,
yeah,
or, you know, create your own database. But now you're on the hook for keeping track of these things. You're on the hook for letting people reset their password. There's an awful lot of stuff that you are now on the hook for. Why do that?
Why do it?
There's already lots of other ways, lots of other people that will do that, whether it's us or Facebook or Twitter or Google or what have you. So
exactly.
Or Azure Active Directory. You could also go that route.
And you got to remember, you have an app, right? And if someone installs the Facebook app or the SkyDrive app, like they're going to log in and they know it's a Microsoft app, they're going to trust them.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to trust some app that's asking them to log into their Facebook
and
account?
Create another username and password.
Right?
Why do I need another username and password?
Why do that, right?
Okay.
So with OAuth, like I wasn't an OAuth expert at all. And it made it super simple. I'm not going to scroll on too far, but we have Microsoft, Facebook, and Twitter, and we can see one of my keys. I won't scroll down too far. But it's pretty simple. You go to, I did it for Twitter because I'm on Twitter all the time at James Montemagno. And it was really simple. You just went to Twitter, said new app, and that was it. And there's amazing documentation on the Azure website to set up all of these. And what I love about Azure is it's open to everything, right?
Yes.
Any platform, whatever. So I've set that up. And that's where, if I come back to my expense here, we'll see we added one more table, which was a user ID table.
Okay.
So not only did Azure require me to add this ID method, it also required me to add the user ID method. So there's a little bit of setup, obviously great documentation on that. But let's go ahead and look at my Windows Phone project. Okay. So the reason that this was working is that I've actually added all this stuff before. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't just trick it. But we kind of skipped over it earlier, but the mobile service has a current user.
Okay.
Okay. Now the current user is what you use to do some authorization, and it's going to store specific tokens for you automatically and do the, the login. So what I did is I pulled all the data, this big long auth token, and I tricked it.
Okay.
You don't want to do this. This would be bad because tokens expire and let Azure kind of handle that hard work for you. So this is why I was working. It's a little smoke and mirrors, I'm not going to lie. But it's great because all I got to do is comment this out, right? So now we don't have any user. If I ran this app, it would just be very, very upset with me. They would not like that at all, right?
Why?
Because I haven't asked anyone to log in.
Where in the app does the app care?
Let's do it. So the app doesn't care at all. It's actually the Azure Mobile Services. When I make these, where am I at? In my Azure service, when I make these calls, Azure Mobile Service, the component and the NuGet SDK handles it all for you. You don't have to do anything.
Okay.
It'll assign the user ID based on your login user and takes care of all the heavy lifting for you. In fact, if I go back over to my table, if I looked at my scripts, so these are a little bit of JavaScript that runs in the back end, is I've added a few lines of code that assigns the ID to my item.
Okay.
So this gets called when I go to insert or update. It says use set this ID of who's doing it and then process the request, right? I had this as sample code, but you could also validate the data here and pass back bad results. You could do that, I'm not gonna do that. So you add that little bit of code there. There's two lines of code in the script, which is in the documentation. Of course, we have to ask our users to log in. So what I did over in my Windows Phone, now this is a little bit of the platform specific stuff. So while we were doing everything in the portable class library before, we actually have to ask our users to log in natively on each platform.
Okay.
Now, luckily, the Azure Mobile Services components and NuGets handle it all for you. So what I do here is I have an instance and I have access to my mobile service from my Azure service. And what I can do is I can ask it to log in, right? And the reason we're doing this is because we want a native look and feel on each platform. To be honest, mostly OAuth is just popping up a web browser and grabbing the tokens, right? But Azure does all that for you. You don't have to worry about making those REST calls and synchronizing all that data for you. It's all done for you.
Yep.
So what I was doing before is I was looping continuously. If I don't have a user, keep trying to log in. But since I had set a user, this code didn't run.
Okay.
Right? Additionally, we're going to want to call this from somewhere. So I'm going to call it from my unloaded here. So instead of before I go and synchronize everything, I'm going to await, authenticate, right?
Yep.
It's my authenticate method. There it is.
Yeah.
That's my code. So really not too much code in my platform, and I could do the same thing in my Android project as well. So if we look.
And now in this specific example, you've hard-coded Twitter authentication, but you could certainly
yes.
let the user decide.
Correct. Then you could switch case it. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So you can implement all these. So when I do a dot here, right, I can see that I can actually tie into Google, exactly. Microsoft, Twitter, Windows Azure Active Directory as well. So it's up to you what you want to do. I did Twitter just because it was easier for me just to do one. But of course, you would just have, you could have your, I'd probably do a user UI on top of it and say, what do you want to log into?
Right.
Right, and then you just pass that down. It's in your view model. Pretty simple. So inside of here, we're going to do the exact same thing, but if I scroll down to the bottom, we're going to see basically the same exact method. Mm-hmm. The only difference here is that the actual login async takes a reference to the current activity because it needs some state, whereas Windows Phone and Windows Store, actually, applications are built in a little bit better.
Okay.
And then I actually pop up a message for some reason if they don't log in.
Right.
So again, here we're going to simply call, authenticate. Now again, I had two Twitter users. I have Xamarin James 1 and Xamarin James 2.
Okay.
If we looked over in my, here's my Azure. So if we looked over here, we were actually storing that user ID. So
right.
Xamarin James 1, Xamarin James 1, Xamarin James 2. So this is Xamarin James 1, so let's go ahead and log in with this guy on the Windows Phone. I'll pop both of them up at the same time so we can see how this looks like. Let's try this guy here. See this guy build up and deploy. Packaging. So it takes a few seconds to package up all the new stuff, and it should deploy. This is the old one that was running. So, all right, let's see here. So first thing we'll see the top bar here switch to authenticate.
Okay.
And I've got in a nice. So I've called this Xamarin Azure. I have our logo here. I can see it's from Xamarin.com.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to log in here with Xamarin James 1. So this is the user that was already there. And I'm going to hide this for a second while I type it in. I've learned my lesson of how passwords work. So I'm going to type in my password. It ends with a 6, as you can see.
We're one step closer to guessing it.
Yeah. So now we got the same data, so that's correct. So we're synchronizing with that same user account. So let's go ahead and see if we can get the Windows Phone working. Let's see if it was just running. Or, I might have to just kill the emulator and try that again. So let's set that guy as my startup again. Should have probably ran without debugging the last time, so whenever you kill it, right, it kills the app. So this guy will log back in. So I wasn't storing any data before, so it's going to ask me to log in again, but I'll do that over here. That was great. So our Windows Phone doesn't want to go, but rest assured it does work.
Yep.
But it's great. We'll just do it differently on our same app. Let's say you have your tablet at home. We'll log in with Xamarin James 2, right?
Yep.
We'll go ahead and hide this again because they're actually the same password. Nice and secure. All right, so we're logged in.
And it should show no data because you're a different person.
No data. Correct.
Excellent.
So now if we add a new record in here, so we'll say Xamarin James 2, right? He's really expensive. too many U's. We'll save that guy up there. And let's take a look now at our at what's going on here. So you'd see the same thing pop up on Windows mm-hmm. Phone. I'll have to debug that later. But here we go. We have a brand new entry in here for Xamarin James 2. In fact, we could sort these. But we can see here's the big thing to look at. The Hanselman in it here for you is, oops.
So then all you need to do in your app is add a query to return the correct user ID.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I do. So so here, for instance, yeah, I've logged in with a different user. It's the same app. I could actually log out, log back in. So what I did in behind the scenes is when I query my database from my portable class library, and the reason this works is because in my data layer, I'm also storing that user ID. So inside of here, I say,
okay,
give me, just like I ask Azure. Azure handles giving me the correct user ID back, but I say, show me only visible and only for the user that's logged in.
Right.
And then I order it by my due date. So I create a nice link query there in my database. Cool. So there we go. It should be working just fine when you download it from the GitHub.
Excellent.
On all of them as well. So the same thing, a few lines of code on iOS would be the same.
Yep. Very, very, very cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so just to recap, right? I mean, all your code, portable class library, a little bit of code inside of your each platform for the logging in and just for synchronizing. We've taken advantage of this multi-connected universe, but I've written all my code in C#, shared it on all my platforms, and added new features in just like a few hours.
Sweet.
Perfect.
Excellent. Yeah. All right, so that's episode 3 of 4, and the fourth and, for now, final episode. We're going to take an existing .NET app and mobilize it.
Yeah,
all right,
be awesome.
That will be the next episode, which will be next week. And then after that, we'll have to think about what we do for encores, because I got a feeling we're not done here.
Yeah, let us know how you, the feedback has been fantastic, and people on Twitter and on the comments, so love the feedback.
All right, see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.
Bye.